We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Madeira back on the Dr. Madeira Show, and today we have a special guest, Dr. Jill Krista. How are you doing, Dr. Jill?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Yes, we've been really looking forward to this, and I'm really excited to have you as a guest because this is the mold topic is huge, and a lot of people need to be more educated on it. For those of you who don't know who Dr. Jill Krista is, she's a naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, and nationally recognized health educator on mold-related health issues. Her passion is to improve health by raising men's awareness of the hazards of exposure to toxic mold. If you're wanting to gain actionable steps to conquer hormone and health challenges related to toxic mold, check out her book, Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health. And that's actually how I first heard about you. I was at Dr. Paul Anderson's conference in Portland, Oregon, and I believe that was September 2018. And he was kind of announcing that your book was coming out or had come out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, you know, really honored to have you as a guest and excited to have you share your knowledge with everybody. What are some key things that you're finding? I follow you on social media and, you know, fairly recently you posted about the refrigerator filters, I believe it was, having a toxic mold in them that can cause dementia. Is that right?
Yeah. Just to terrify people a little more, right?
Yeah.
I've seen in the mold world that there's a lot of good ideas and speculation, but you know, we need to follow it up with scientific testing. So I'm a big fan of testing, and I'm dangerous because give me a test tube and I'll be swabbing anything. So that's what I did. I was changing out my filter and I thought, I wonder if this has mold. And so I grabbed a test tube and sent it in. And sure enough, it had a mold in it called cotomium. And I thought, well, maybe that's just because, you know, maybe there's cotomium in my environment or something like that. So I ran to my neighbor and I tested hers. I ran to my parents. I tested theirs. And that was something that I found consistent. That was the one consistent toxic mold that I found among all three, and varying brands, varying time frame that the filter had been in use. And I just found that really shocking. And after I posted that, I actually heard from a water quality person who said, oh yeah, we're seeing a lot of that in water management, and seeing it becoming almost like one of the resistant molds. So I thought that was very interesting. So for our family, what I do and what I recommend is that everybody unhook the water source to your refrigerator for two reasons, not just that reason, but also because when I talk to indoor environmental inspectors, the water line to the refrigerator is the reason for many water accidents in a house. So just get rid of it, unhook it, turn the water off to it, and use old school ice cubes. Yeah. So for men's health, I think the reason why I'm so excited that you invited me on your podcast is I really want to convey to men all of the ways that they're not realizing that mold might be affecting them if they've been exposed to a water damaged building or even a damp building. So what we would consider conditions that would grow indoor toxic mold. And those things are that kind of a bullet point overview is that it gets in the way of men maintaining muscle mass. It gets in the way of energy, so it causes a lot of fatigue. It gets in the way of men's hormones. It gets in the way of mitochondrial function, so that ATP, that VO2 max, so your performance ability. It's just all of these things that mold can impact that really impact the smarts, the performance, the energy of somebody who's trying to be a high performance man.
Yeah, that's a really good overview. And I first saw one of your, I think it was a video post as well on social media, on Instagram, about testosterone being depleted or decreased by mold, mycotoxins, and as well as thyroid. So maybe we can start with testosterone, since most men are more concerned about their testosterone levels as they age.
Absolutely. So the big picture is that we're kind of taught that mold is a spore problem. When you look at the CDC, when they list the conditions related to mold exposure, they're listing things associated with spores. So they're listing allergies, asthma, something called hypersensitivity pneumonitis, which basically means hypersensitive lungs. What they're not talking about is the bigger part about mold sickness, which is the mycotoxins. Molds in an indoor environment form these mycotoxins, which are mold toxins, in an attempt to compete out other molds. Not all molds create these, but all molds do create certain chemicals. But these mycotoxins are so poisonous that militaries around the world are using them as biowarfare. So do they affect everybody? Yes. It's a matter of dose, duration, and your personal sensitivity. So these are toxins that are really aimed at the other molds so that the mold can keep its, you know, waterfront property is the way I think of it. If you have just a little bit of water to a teeny tiny mold, that's like waterfront property. So it gets competitive and it starts to spit out these toxins. And these toxins are aimed at other molds, but they definitely affect humans. They affect pets. They affect every living thing. So we get caught in that crossfire. So that's what I want people to really understand is when you are in a building that smells musty, run away, because you're getting poisoned by these poisons that have been made into biowarfare. So again, not to scare everybody, I'm trying to make everyone aware, but also there's a lot that you can do to get better. When you get exposed to those toxins, you breathe them in through your respiratory passages. You can take them in through skin. You can take them in by eating them or ingesting them. Most of the time, it's an inhalational exposure. When you get that inhalational exposure, they seep right into your lungs. They go right into the bloodstream and the body has to process them as a toxin. Whereas like spores, usually your body senses that's a problem and it'll trap them in the mucus and you cough it out because they're big. They kind of get trapped in all of that. The toxins are teeny tiny. They're a chemical, not a living thing. So they get seeped right into the bloodstream. Our liver and kidneys have to manage them. If we can't detoxify them very well or if the dose is really high, then you have to store them. And where they get stored is in the fat and in the glands because they're fat-soluble toxins. So the glands, meaning testes, then are dealing with trying to do their job with the toxin on board. And what we've seen that you can also inhale it into the brain. So it's hitting the testosterone levels in two places in the body. It's going right to the testes and affecting the Leydig cells, which are the testosterone-producing cells. They produce testosterone under the influence of luteinizing hormone. So they get destruction from these toxins. The actual cells get destroyed. And that's been proven in scientific studies. And the stuff in the brain is affecting the pituitary function and the secretion of LH, so or luteinizing hormone. So now you've got reduced stimulation of testosterone production with cells that can't make the testosterone as efficiently as it used to. So that's just the testosterone piece. The other thing is that a lot of these toxins are estrogenic. So for women, that's bad news because it's the bad estrogen. So it's the cancer-promoting estrogen. For men, it's bad news because now you have the way that testosterone is manufactured in the body. It can also reverse engineer back into estrogen. And so now you have more arrows pointing toward, if you do have testosterone on board, we want more arrows pointing toward the estrogen when you're exposed to mold. And that's what we get that kind of like, even though there's a frank testosterone reduction, there's now a relative reduction in relation to your estrogen levels.
Yeah, it does seem like most men aren't even aware of this being an issue. And even if they are, they think, well, if I am exposed to mold, it's probably in a place like Seattle or a river valley town or a very humid mm-hmm. climate like Florida or Georgia. Southeast US, not a place like Phoenix or LA. What are you seeing as far as exposures, and what is the data there? Can everybody be exposed to mold? If someone's listening to this today and they're in Phoenix, should they be concerned?
Everyone can be exposed to mold. This is an indoor environmental problem. So this has nothing to do with the climate that you live in. Certainly there are some climates that are going to be more prone toward humidity and flooding and that kind of a thing. But that's one big, very, very big misconception, is that, oh, if I live in a dry area, I can't have toxic mold in my indoor environment. And that's ridiculous. We all try to have the same sort of indoor environment. We live at about 70 degrees. We like a certain level of humidity for our respiratory passages. So that indoor environment is what is the determinant of health in this case. If you have been exposed to indoor toxic mold, it makes you more sensitive to the outdoor molds, which sometimes that's the way that I have picked up on mold sensitivity. I ask, you know, where they live, when do the mushrooms come out where you live, or when, you know, when are things drying up, or because drying molds can actually spit out more spores, kind of like, I think about Superman and his parents. They know their planet is dying, and so they put him in a little pod and ship him out to find a habitable environment. That's kind of what happens when molds dry. So you've got these two seasons. I think of them as the shoulder seasons, the times when the mushrooms grow and the times when everything is drying out, that mold sick people tend to have a harder time being outside. And that is a little bit of a clue for me that I can say, oh, I think this might be a fungal thing. And then we have the question mark of, is it an internal candida overgrowth because they're sugar addicted, they're overdoing alcohol, you know, different things like that. If their diet is on board and they're doing all the right things and they are still allergic or sensitive to molds out in the outdoor environment, then we go looking at the house. And that can be anywhere. I consult with people all over the globe, and it doesn't matter where you live, there are molds. And there are fungus that are naturalized to certain places. There is a fungus you can get, a fungal infection from desert dirt, basically, from sand. Right. So, you know, it doesn't matter where you live, you can still... You have to manage your indoor environment to prevent this.
Thank you for saying that, because that can be, I think, one of the biggest, as you said, one of the biggest misconceptions and barriers to helping our patients is if they don't think that that's even a concern, then helping them get the right testing. I had a patient actually recently in Seattle who is in a condo complex in Seattle, and the nearby pipe that wasn't in her condo but leaked into her wall space caused a mold overgrowth. And then they had an inspector come that said the ERMI was, the ERMI was actually not that accurate and not really valid, and that they don't need to be concerned for mold. And I don't know all the inspections they did. However, I'm still concerned because the patient is using, or they've been prescribed pretty much every hormone replacement therapy that you can prescribe. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at like full systems shutdown from an endocrine point of view. And, you know, if that's not helping them feel better and they were doing that a whole year before coming to see me, obviously it's something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So...
I'm really glad you brought that up about the hormone replacement therapy, because if we really understand the mechanism of mold and how it's affecting the endocrine system, like I was telling you about these certain molds that are estrogenic, if you put a man on testosterone therapy and you're not managing the mold part, you're now encouraging more estrogenic conversion. So you have to be really careful to rule this out before testosterone goes on board, because you could actually be making somebody so much sicker. And in a woman, you could be actually encouraging cancer formation. So, and you know, in men too, I mean, you see a high estradiol related to prostate cancer. So that these are things that are really important to be a first rule out before someone considers going on hormone therapy.
Yeah, it does seem like people are looking for, you know, human nature to look for the quick fix. You know, give me a prescription, give me a pill, give me an injection of a hormone or whatever. But as we're talking, we're, you know, root cause practitioners, And hopefully the listeners are looking for a root cause solution, because like you just said, what's the issue? What's the worst thing that can happen if you don't? Well, you could get cancer, prostate cancer for men. And I believe you're alluding to breast cancer for women. Mm-hmm. Is there any data out there showing that mold can cause prostate cancer? Do we have that information yet? Or is it basically a pathophysiological thing that we can say, well, it causes this, therefore it can cause that?
Yeah, pathophysiological. Unfortunately, there's a concerted effort to reduce funding to human research in mold, because that means now a lot of people have to pay for things like remediation of office buildings and healthcare expenses and that kind of thing. So what we're doing, and the challenge I have, is that I'm now having to do translational medicine from animal research to humans, application of what we're seeing working in animals and feed and animal husbandry. And now we're left with, okay, well, what's the dose that works in a human? And thankfully, I'm a naturopathic doctor. I had years of experience with herbs and nutrients. I have strong comfort level there. I have a huge comfort level of combining herbs and drugs. So I have a comfort level with what dose is pushing it and what is a safe dose, what's a safe application, what are things that are okay to do together, that kind of thing. So that's how I developed a lot of my protocols, was just realizing that, okay, this is what's working in animals. How have I seen that work in a yeast affected person in my patient population? Let me try that plus a little heavier dose, and maybe combining it with things, because fungi tend to be very tenacious. So yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the things that it's easy to say, you know, well, show me the study. Well, I would love to. And so a lot of us are in the position of having to create our own clinical studies, and that just doesn't carry weight for a certain mindset, you know? So the evidence is efficacy. That's where we're left with, is that, well, I can show you the fact that it's worked in countless numbers of patients. So that's my, you know, proof is in the pudding kind of thing, but unfortunately not much in human research. I can't tell you one human trial in the United States where they have said, first of all, this is mold, mold that made the person sick, and then applied a therapy, a singular therapy, and then took the results. I really look forward to that day. I'm calling for it.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, recently in the news in the
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply."
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune, military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post 9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
Seattle area, the Seattle Children's Hospital had a huge mold, I guess, overgrowth in the building. And that was all over the headlines, people sharing it on Facebook, friends and colleagues of mine. And so I think it's starting to kind of like seep into some circles that, hey, this is a really, really big problem. And there's still, from what I see from my patient population, of kind of this speculation of kind of like, well, what does that have to do with hormones? You know, right, what does that have to do with my thyroid and my testosterone? Right. Like I go to work, I go home, I go to the gym, like I don't know where the mold is kind of thing. And, you know, just give me the hormones or just give me all these medicines.
And the problem with that, I was following that story, and it's still stopped at spores. The conversation stopped at spores. Nobody was talking about the toxins and the fact that those toxins persist. They're persister chemicals in bodies, and they're persister chemicals in indoor spaces. So, you know, there have been some occupational studies where they knew that there was an occupational exposure, remove everybody from the building, remediate the building, and watch their symptoms. And they're finding that over half of the people didn't get better just by being out of the building. And so it leaves us with that question mark of, well, why? What's going on there? A few explanations could be that when they went back into the building, they were exposed to particles and fragments, like Brian Carr talks about, these ultrafine particulate. Another explanation could be that once you remediate, mold gets defensive and it starts to make more toxins. It starts to make more spores, you know, sending out Superman baby again. And another explanation could be mycotoxins, and that it has altered the flora of that person. And there's genetic susceptibility, nutrient deficiencies that lead you to be more susceptible to an exposure. The argument is, well, if we tested everybody's sinuses, we would find all of this fungus, like Aspergillus, in the sinuses. We see it in healthy people, we see it in sick people. So what's the difference? And the difference tends to be, if you did a nasal lavage or wash, the people that are sick, their fungi are making mycotoxins. People that are healthy, their fungi are not. So we have a normal flora versus a pathogenic biofilm kind of attitude or way of being. You're either being with community or you're being antisocial as a microbe. And it's the microbes that have been turned on to be competitive that are the problem. And that's why part of my treatment program is actually the last step is actually to kill the fungus or to be take antifungals, because that has to be reset. It's like our body is supposed to have normal flora, the right bugs, the right place at the right population. And when you've been exposed to the gases of mycotoxins from a water damaged building, your own flora becomes part of the problem. It's almost like a SIBO. So that's what I want people to really understand, because then they think, well, like in the hospital situation, and it's a children's hospital, so you have kids with immune deficiency, that they actually may need to be treated for mold, even though they've been removed from the environment. If they're still exhibiting symptoms, they need to be treated, because now something has affected their own internal flora and they've taken on these fungi that are now colonizing their body and have to be reset.
It's kind of like in the sci-fi movies when they go to the alien planet and they don't know that they've been infected by the alien and they leave.
Yeah, right.
And then the aliens that kill everybody on the ship. It's a little more extreme example, but
yeah.
It's maybe helps the, you know, everyday listener who's used to Hollywood to kind of get an idea of how severe this can be. And, you know, we're talking about breast cancer for women as a sequelae, and you know, for men, low testosterone can lead to all kinds of things. What about low thyroid? So low thyroid today and Hashimoto's, I'm seeing more and more with men, autoimmune thyroiditis, for the listeners who don't know what Hashimoto's is. And as well as, you know, it's pretty much epidemic proportions already for women. So how does mold play into something like that?
Quite a few different ways. One of the ways that we look at thyroid is how much thyroid is in the blood. We do these blood tests. And if you run, most doctors aren't running like the full panel. And if you could run the full panel and see something called sex hormone binding globulin, which is a protein, if that is low, that's going to be one of your cardinal signs. So if we're just looking at TSH, you're not really getting enough information. Obviously, you know that as a holistic practitioner. The problem with mold is that the toxins, mycotoxins, are potent protein synthesis inhibitors. And I want to, in a little bit, talk about what that means for how you can look like you have low thyroid or low testosterone, low thyroid, but not actually have it low because of this other effect that mold does. But it does impede the production of all kinds of proteins that carry hormones around. So if you're not able to make the protein for heme, which is it helps us carry oxygen around, made from iron, and you're not able to carry around thyroid because sex hormone binding globulin is now being produced at a lower rate, you can actually create a cellular hypothyroidism. The other thing that this protein synthesis inhibition does is it reduces our ability to make good skeletal muscle. So you can see someone who's coming to you, I can just see the scenario, hey doc, I think I have low testosterone. You know, I can't gain now. I'm in the gym. I'm not getting the gains I'm wanting. My skin is sagging. All the signs that you might see, maybe they have nocturia. There's a connection there too. So you can go into the bathroom through the night. There's a hormone in the brain that doesn't get made when you've been exposed to mold. It affects the pituitary function of ADH. So they're running to the bathroom all the time. What are some other testosterone signs? I bet I could bring every single one of them back to a potential mold effect.
Sure. Yeah. Low motivation.
Low motivation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Low energy, low drive. So yep. Not just for sex, but low sex drive is a huge one. Erectile dysfunction.
Perfect. Yeah. So that's mitochondrial deficiency. So mold, every mold mycotoxin reduces glutathione, which reduces your mitochondrial activity. So you can see that that mitochondrial dysfunction, which is like no motivation because they just don't have the core energy. They just don't have, they're not making the ATP. So I see on my end, you know, a lot of chronically ill people, but it's fun working with people that are a little more healthy that get affected by mold, because then you can say, hey, look, you know, that first sign that you had 2 years ago when you had to take that job in that moldy building, the skin sagging, the fatigue, you're not able to lift as much weight as you wanted to, you know, lots of little things, that is all, that can all be related to mold toxicity and exposure, and you can treat it.
Yeah.
And they can get their health back. You know, that's the thing. Yeah. So that's a round robin way of answering about the thyroid.
Yeah. And you're definitely right. I mean, even I would say a lot of holistic practitioners don't test sex hormone binding globulin. You know, I used to work, how I got into the men's hormone health field is I used to run two men's health clinics, low testosterone clinics in the greater Western Washington, Seattle metropolitan area. And, you know, we tested sex hormone binding globulin, but I see patients come and see me all the time. And when I was in that clinic, patients come and see me from these, you know, their general practitioner at the main hospital near them or in Seattle. And they would have just a total testosterone and just a TSH. It's mm-hmm. kind of like, well, you know, I don't really know what to do with this because this doesn't really tell us really anything what's going on here.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad that you mentioned that.
In women, you get told, oh, that's because they were probably on the pill or xenoestrogens and some of these things. And yeah, it is sort of a xenoestrogen that you're getting exposed to with some of these toxic molds. But in a man, when you see low sex hormone binding globulin, I've seen people just kind of shrug like, well, I don't know. You know, and I think, well, check this, you know, it's a possibility. Not everything is mold, but you know, it's a possibility and it's a pretty consistent one, mm-hmm. especially if you see liver enzymes starting to rise. Mold toxins are a lot like alcohol. Alcohol is from yeast. So, you know, we can actually see someone starting to develop all the signs and symptoms of alcoholism from exposure to a water damaged building.
That is insane. That is wild.
Isn't that crazy?
That is like a complete hijacking of the whole nervous system and brain, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So in that sense, is it similar to Candida albicans, where Candida tells the brain to eat more sugar to feed the Candida?
Yes. Mold is... does two very consistent things with people and their way of processing or personality. They go toward things that will further feed the mold and the yeast and the fungal overgrowth of the body. And of all the environmental medicine people that I work with, mold people are the most stubborn to the fact that they're most resistant. I won't say stubborn. Stubborn is more lead toxicity. They're most resistant to the fact that mold could be the problem. They're okay. Very resistant, and it makes sense because, first of all, your brain affected. These toxins go into the brain, they cause inflammation, so processing, cognitive problems. You know, you might see somebody that said, I just get so tired at work, I almost want to take a nap under my desk because my brain shuts down. So that kind of, it affects the way that you think, but it also is impacting your sanctuary, either your home or if you're getting exposed at work, it's your survival, it's your money-making ability. So it's easier to say, you know, hey, Dr. Sam, how about you just give me testosterone? We'll just, you know, ignore this other problem. And I think a little bit of that is okay, because a little bit of support when somebody is frankly low on their hormones, that helps them get it together and start to make good decision making. But, you know, what I was trying to make the point about supplementation is that you also have to make sure that you're ruling out all the other things that could be going on with this person. And that's why we're in the medicine that we're in, because we've all seen where someone's been put on higher and higher and higher and higher hormones, and oh, well, now you need that, you may need this other one, and now let's add pregnenolone because it's an anti-inflammatory, and let's add, and pretty soon they're on so many hormones and are getting negative health effects from that.
Yeah. And then the patient becomes attached to the medications instead of saying, okay, you know, in some cases, you know, they may need one hormone or two hormones, but when they're attached to like four or five, just to get out the door in the morning.
Right.
And that's right. Really concerning to us.
To us. Yeah. That's why in my book, I finally tried to figure out like, what the process, we've always referred to the process of healing as peeling the onion, that as you heal, old stuff comes back to kind of exorcise from the body, so to speak. So, you know, you peel the onion, you can get these layers and layers of stuff. A skin rash from when you were four comes back as your last hurrah, and people get freaked out. And so I've always tried to train my patients that, okay, you have a food allergy you've had since you were a kid. Now we've had some steroids on board. Now we've had, you know, all of these hormone things are off and you're getting joint pain. Here's the diet change. And patients know when they come to us, they're going to get homework. Call me. I'm going to be so excited when that rash from when you were a kid or your eczema comes back, because we're going to support you and it'll move through. And it was so fun when you give them that expectation. My staff was always like, we get the weirdest phone calls here. And it is that, hey, I just got this terrible rash. I'm so excited. My guts are working. I'm sleeping. You know, my sex drive is back, but I got this horrible rash. Tell Dr. Jill I'm super excited. It's working. And that's a beautiful miracle, you know, of watching somebody peel that onion. But the process of getting better from mold, I was trying to get like, is it kind of like peeling the onion? I need a visual for this, because there are certain steps that I've learned that when they're done in a certain way, work a lot better. And you don't have to make people get terrible rashes in order to get better. And that's a visual of the orange. That's where I came up with that in my book, because it is five steps, but two of them really need to be done. The first two need to be done as thoroughly as possible. And that's kind of like an orange. You take that orange, you know, icky part out that tastes like wax, and you take the white fluffy stuff off, and then you have the sections and you can pick and choose from those. You don't have to do all of the things that are recommended for conquering mold. You pick and choose the things that match your patient the most and where they are most affected, because not everybody is going to be exposed to the estrogenic and testosterone crashing mold toxin. They might be impacted more by the brain toxin or by the kidney toxin. So you need to know those species by testing so that you know how to target their treatment. And so in the five steps, I have avoidance is number one. Number two is fundamentals. And those need to be peeled completely, which means do them completely or, you know, the best they can. And then we protect, we repair, and fifth is fight. And what I learned is if you go in and start throwing the antifungals without having the first two things fully done, which is avoidance, 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 avoidance. You put someone on antifungals and they're still in the mold and you haven't supported their body with all the fundamentals, which is like what naturopathic doctors call basic treatment guidelines. If you do that, you can actually make your patient worse. They get better from some of the deep stuff, but they get surface way worse, you know, skin rash and some of that stuff, insomnia, anxiety. You know, it's not, people don't like you when you do that.
No.
Yeah. They don't like to come back. Yeah. So that's the order of treatment that I've kind of come up with. There's no perfect way. It's an approach, you know, and not every patient is going to be willing to do all the work. But boy, Dr. Kernian taught us avoidance, avoidance, avoidance. That's the first three rules of toxic exposure. And so many patients are really resistant to that. And you could, again, it makes sense, but it's also mold's Jedi mind trick, because it wants to keep you in the environment so it can compost you.
Right.
Ew.
Which, yeah, that's scary. Think about that for a little bit.
Yeah, you're just a food source to it. You know, it's like, okay, I'll just work on decomposing this biological material. You know, that's its job. It's just showing up to work, you know, putting its sandwich in the fridge, like going to work, you know, like.
Yeah. You're next for lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that does. I like that perspective because I think as humans, we get really attached to our things and our homes, and rightfully so. I mean, I'm no different than anybody else in that regard. And, you know, I have records and things like that that maybe I should throw away the record cover. And I did actually throw away tons of records that had some mold on them that were old records from parents or other places. And when I was in naturopathic medical school, as we were talking about before we started the recording, my mom's basement in Vermont flooded because the pipes froze and then they burst. And everything in the basement that wasn't in a plastic container, which thankfully a lot of things were damaged by the mold or had mold toxins on them or whatnot. So there was a lot of things that were thrown away. And some things that were not, and some things that probably stuck around me too long or around other people. So do you usually recommend that people get rid of everything they can? And, you know, if they can't remediate their home, is that usually a conversation with, okay, it's time to leave completely?
That's a great question. I think that we're put in that position in medicine to negotiate this with our patients, you know, help them negotiate what their decision making needs to be about this. But I do remind my patients that I am a body specialist. You know, to become a building specialist takes a whole lot of education and experience as well. So I try as much as possible to steer them toward a trained inspector and somebody like Brian Carr. I love working with them because they're so holistic. They think about buildings the way we think about bodies, and they're really good diagnosticians. So, you know, it's that treat the cause thing. So I love Brian's class, Mold Masterclass, because he does go through the, what do you do about stuff? And I think that there's a lot of, it depends, you know, well, it depends. How long was the mold problem? How extensive was the mold problem? How close was the stuff to where the mold was growing? Is the stuff porous? Is it thickly porous? Or is it just like a blankie, you know, or a piece of clothing? Can it be remediated easily? If it can't, how worth it is it to you to spend the money to put it in an ozone chamber or to put it in something that, you know, may remediate, may not? And again, the science on this is a little bit too much funding by people who are making the stuff to clean stuff up. And so I've been doing a lot of personal testing, pre and post testing, trying different things. And so far I've seen that essential oils are the bomb. They both neutralize the mycotoxins and they kill the mold. So I have a list of them in my book. And let's see. And I have a DIY video out there of how to make your own nasal spray, which is part of the treatment that I recommend. And so someone can go to YouTube and look for that DIY essential oil nasal spray. I list the same essential oils in that video too. But I've used them in remediating with my patients because many mycotoxins are heat stable. So you can't just wash stuff on hot and dry it on hot and think that you took care of the problem because they're sticky, gooey, they're a chemical. So when we spike the laundry with essential oils, we're seeing much better responses in most types of fibers, but not all. So yeah, my recommendation usually is like, can we please bring on a specialist in the building and the stuff part? Because I'm really good at the body. That's what I can do. But I also know that the reason I'm getting good results is I'm very pushy about avoidance. They're, like I said, they're very, patients with mold toxicity are very resistant to the fact that it's mold. And so they will try to negotiate with me that it's not really a problem. And now that I've become kind of like the mold lady, now people know, okay, yeah, she's going to make me do this. But, you know, early in my career, it was like two things were really hard. Yes, you have to avoid the mold. And yes, you have to eat more fat. And it's so nice that now people are open to the idea of fat and eating more fat because these toxins are fat soluble. So you need to dilute them with fats. So yeah, my two things that I feel like I've really had success with is that avoidance piece and being very pushy about that. And then getting the antifungals on board. Those are some big ones.
Thank you for sharing that. I had some more specific questions about where people are finding mold. Sleep apnea is a major cause of low testosterone in men. And I don't have confirmation on this, so I wanted to hear what your opinion and experience was, that some people are finding mold growth or something in the CPAP machines. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you had heard that or seen that in any patients where they're not cleaning their CPAP machine correctly or with, you know, something like essential oils, if that's possible to help. What have you seen or heard out there in the mold community?
Yeah, well, I actually have a story in my book about this. One of my cases was a case of dementia. And it was a family that I see all the adult children and their parents and their kids. And so there was this weird thing that was happening with their mom that she was starting to show signs of dementia. And this is a really healthy person. I mean, this healthy family, they're seeing a naturopathic doctor. They're all, you know, drinking our Kool-Aid, our healthy Kool-Aid, so to speak. And she started to develop these dementia symptoms, leaving the stove on, leaving the garage door open at night, forgetting where she is, you know, didn't take her pills because she kind of just, you know, you start to lose those little things. It turns out that she had mold in her CPAP machine. And the only time she could sleep is when she would nap downstairs, not when she was upstairs in her room. She had a terrible insomnia. She'd fall asleep out of just sheer exhaustion and then be up every hour after that, which is not sleep, you know. And the CPAP was supposed to fix this. Well, it turns out they had mold in their CPAP and in their basement. She was in the basement doing this clean out. That's when all of this stuff started. So I think she probably brought it up into her CPAP machine. But now that, and we tested it, you know, we kind of got down to the, okay, we remediated your basement, your husband's CPAP machine was checked out okay, but yours did not. You're displaying signs of dementia. He is not. What's going on there? And she said, oh, I'm just probably pretty bad about cleaning mine. I'm really good about cleaning his. And we get Medicare only reimburses or only gives them new tubing every so often. And so she was replacing his tubing every time they would get tubing because, you know, as women, you prioritize the people in your life. And she wasn't cleaning hers or changing her tubing at all. So when we got that taken care of, the dementia went away like magic. She, wow. Good. She had all the things on board, all the foundational things were on board. We just had to do the avoidance part. And we, you know, treated her sinuses, gave her systemic antifungals, gave her some specific nutrient support to help with dementia and to help dilute out those toxins and detox. But holy moly, I mean, it's a miracle case. And all she had to do is clean her CPAP. So I do like those CPAP machines that treat with ozone. They're like a contained unit and you just take your mask off and put the mask in this unit and it cleans it and runs a cycle, and then by the time you need to use it again for the next night's sleep, that ozone has dissipated off. That's my favorite little unit. I think it's called So Clean or something like that. Essential oils also work. So if somebody mm-hmm. is very ozone worried, or, you know, doesn't, or they like essential oils or something like that, they work fine too. They're just a little harder to administer. It's not as easy as like, bloop, you know, off with the mask and into the unit.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing all that. And those essential oils, again, are in your book, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Great. And then the other question I had, which has been kind of advertised or I guess coming from the Bulletproof coffee world, is that there are mycotoxins in some coffee beans.
Yeah, there are some foods that are just prone toward mold growth because of our mass growing and storage practices. So those are, coffee is one of them, corn is another, potatoes. You know, we see a lot in our medicine, people doing the Carroll test, and they're coming up positive for a lot of these things. And I would love sometime to do a correlative test to see, you know, how many of those foods that are coming up positive for somebody on a food allergy test are actually containing mycotoxins and are altering the proteins in that food and making it allergenic, or the mycotoxins themselves causing the food allergy. So yeah, some of those that we mass produce. So I'll run through them again. Coffee, corn, potatoes, grains, shelled nuts. So nuts that have had the shell off can be a problem if they've been shelled and stored without any kind of aeration. Dried fruits are a big problem. So those are things that can be naturally high in mycotoxins. And then by ingesting them, even if you cook them, a lot of these mycotoxins are heat stable. So even cooking them doesn't, so roasting your coffee and that kind of thing isn't necessarily taking care of it. And that's why things like bulletproof coffee and, you know, mold-free coffee are so important. Wine is another great one.
Oh, sorry,
beer and wine. Wine is another one that's really high in mycotoxins because of the storing of the grapes. Beer is because, you know, the grains, if the grains are not taken care of and it was mass produced, they just basically scrape the mold off the top and then use that grain for making beer. It's really great.
Oh boy. Yeah.
I know.
Another reason not to drink beer besides the fact that the hops are sprayed with Roundup. Just,
yeah. And they're estrogenic and or phytoestrogen. Yeah. All that fun stuff.
Yeah. I have a lot of guys pushing back in my Livestrong group, getting mad at me because I'm the messenger of, hey, stop drinking IPAs, at least just stop drinking IPAs. But, you know,
I know we don't share the funnest news all the time.
Yeah. I try not to do that in, you know, social settings, just let people, you know, live and let live. But
Because you never know what that person's priority is at the moment.
Right.
You know? We are all, we're more of a factor of our microbiome than we really are of our own mind sometimes, I think.
Yeah, that is becoming more and more apparent, I think, with the science that we have today around the microbiome. And as you're mentioning, the mold basically hijacking the brain and the body, it makes more and more sense. The more we learn.
And you really do need to help people with that. You know, we behave according to our belief systems. And when mold is in there altering your belief system, I've seen people become overly attached to their material possessions. They become overly anxious about their ability to make money and have enough money in the bank. They become overly anxious about their own safety. These are all things that mold is actually causing inflammatory changes in the brain that are another cardinal thing that we can see with this condition.
Yeah, it does seem, like you said, the organism is kind of like, I think of it like a parasite or something, where it has hijacked the organism that it is consuming or living off of.
Yeah.
So it's a parasitic, biologically, it's a parasitic relationship, you know, when you think about intro to bio, going back to high school for some people. So here we are, you know, the bearer of bad news again. But I had one other more specific question around where people might find mold and where I've seen it and where I've seen colleagues who are also mold specialists share on social media to educate people. And that is the washing machine for clothes. And I was wondering if that combined with any other key places in homes, I know you're not a home remediation person and we've interviewed Brian Carr on the podcast, so people can go back and listen to that episode for more home remediation information around mold and do his mold masterclass. But washing machines, and you mentioned that people can't just throw their clothes in that have had mold on them in their closet and put them on high heat and kill the mold off. So what has been solutions for your patients where they have a washing machine? For example, my mother had a washing machine that was a front load. Mm-hmm. And it had
Those are terrible.
Yeah, it was bad. And she kept putting clothes in it. And that was an interesting conversation. But like, hey, stop. But it was just caked with mold around the door. I mean, you could just see it. Like,
yeah, the front loaders or any that has a water reservoir, they even have in the paperwork that you need to clean them once a week because they're mold and mildew growers. And by the way, on the indoor environment, people don't make a distinction between mold and mildew necessarily. If your internal environment in your home is moist enough to grow mildew, then it's moist enough to grow a toxic mold. So it's just over 50% humidity, mold can grow. So I just want to make that, people are like, oh, it's just mildew. And like Brian Carr says, you don't know what it is until you test it. You know, these inspectors that I work with, they're surprised all the time. You cannot tell by visual inspection what kind of mold it is. So the front loading washers, I have a little video out there on front loaders and the things that I use to clean it. You need to clean it at least once a week. Never fail. You have to leave the door open so it dries out. They can be used safely, but they have to be managed. Once it's already taken on mold, then you do need to do repeated bleach. And if you're bleach sensitive, I have in the video other things like essential oils, and there's some Lysol. There's a Lysol front loading washer cleaner. A lot of the front loading washer cleaners don't actually clean. They just add fragrance. So I'm not a fan of most of them on the market, like the Tide and that kind of thing. They're not really taking care of the problem. They're just trying to add fragrance to the problem. So you want to use something like bleach, high dose peroxide, which is like, it's found in hair dye. It's called 40 volume. So 15% peroxide can be used. Some of those things are a little hard on the gaskets. So that's why I like to use essential oils, because now we're killing everybody, you know, all the little molds in there, and it's not harming all of the machinery. So other places in a house, basements are a guaranteed place to find mold. Finished basements, every finished basement that we have tested with the inspectors I work with have some level of mold in them. Carpet on weeping concrete is a bad idea. We should be going up, not down with our building practice. And then areas where there can be condensation. So where we live, it's, well, Vermont and Wisconsin, it gets below zero, really, really below zero. And you can actually see condensation in some homes at the outlets, wherever there isn't any kind of insulation. And that's been an interesting finding in our areas that, wow, who knew that was going to be enough condensation to cause a problem. Now, that's only in a home where they're not managing the humidity most of the year. So that little bit of condensation can become a festering problem. The other place we're seeing a lot of mold is furnace coils. So the HVAC companies are onto this now, and they don't want to be liable. So now, like, Trane just made one where you can clean the coils. Normally, in order to get access to the coils on a furnace, you have to have an HVAC specialist come, remove the Freon, diffuse it basically, clean, get access to the coils, put them back in, and recharge the Freon. It's a big deal. So, but we are finding in, I want to say 60 to 65% of the furnace coils that we're testing are hosting toxic mold as well. And that kind of makes sense, because if you have outdoor air coming into your furnace that's humid, and here you have this, you know, hot environment, blowing air. So if you have any any mold in your home, now you've just created a recycled problem. And it's a great little area to grow toxic mold. Let's see, where else? So anywhere that there's water, you know, a lot of times under sinks, that can be a sneaky place. So I really encourage everybody to put plastic, you know, they have these plastic or vinyl things you can put under your sink, and keep an eye on it. Every now and then, do a test of your toilet and see, make sure the wax ring is not allowing any kind of water leakage to come out. So I just put, you know, paper towel at, every now and then. I just kind of check, like, if that paper towel gets wet, uh-oh, what's going on? You know, so you can catch things as a, before they're a big problem. And it's hard when you share a wall. So in an apartment, or you're sharing a ceiling with somebody above you, that's more complicated. But for your home, that's definitely... those are little areas that we're seeing. Roof leaks are, of course, common. Usually those are something that are consistent enough that you can track it to a rain event or a melt, and it leaves a staining in most cases. So you would be able to see some kind of staining on the ceiling, but not always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not if there's enough insulation up there sopping up the problem, and it's just a drip, drip, drip problem.
Right.
So I you know, if someone is a homeowner, and if all of this is not your shtick, hire somebody to do it. On rainstorm times, or if you live in the northern climate where it snows and it's melting time, get outside and take a look at your drainage. Get up in your attic. Make sure that there's no water. You know, these inspectors have meters that can show water accumulation. They can show condensation. They can show temperature changes. They can almost do a prediction for you on, okay, here's an area where there's a temperature differential, and that's an area for potential condensation. Let's take care of it. So in the business of preventive medicine, I'm also in the business of preventive house medicine. And, you know, you can do a lot to prevent things in your own home. Just got to keep an eye on it.
And it's potentially a lot more affordable to do prevention for a home. I mean, these remediations can be $10,000 or, hey, get rid of your home.
Absolutely. So, and going ahead and just accepting it, you know, so sometimes what I see is if there is a water event, like we've had in my own home, we had a water softener that just kept running and then it went all over the place. So cleaned everything up and there was wet material. I called my contractor. They came and cut out all the wet material so that there was no chance and no risk that anything was left. Insulation doesn't dry out. You know, we have firewalls, we have deep walls that won't dry out with just running fans. You have to cut that material out. Did it cost me money to have him come do that? Yes. But it cost me a lot less than it would have been to have a smoldering mold problem come up. And now I've got to hire remediators and pay for containment and all this kind of stuff. When it's newly wet, all you need is a Sawzall and you can get that stuff out of there. So yeah, prevention is way more worth it financially. I'm going ahead and just accepting that, okay, that could be a really big problem. Let's just handle it.
Yeah. And carpets. I remember Brian saying, get rid of your carpets.
Yeah. Carpets are a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're so nice. So they're yeah, so area rugs though, you can pick up an area rug and mm-hmm. have your carpet cleaners come pick them up and take them to go dry out, you know, I mean, or take to your garage and dry out. Area rugs are no problem, but the wall-to-wall carpeting where you can't pull it up and check, that's a problem.
Yeah, it makes sense once you start to think about, you know, how mold can grow and things like that. Mm-hmm. Going back to the case that you shared about the dementia with the CPAP and mold and brain health, I wanted to open up that topic. I know it's a really big topic, but we could start with like Alzheimer's, dementia, and optimizing brain health, maybe for the individual that's listening, thinking, well, I just have brain fog and I'm 45 and I have signs of, you know, low testosterone, but maybe it's mold too. How, you know, what are the mold strains that you're finding and that people might be concerned about? And what other places would they be that we may not have mentioned? Or is there a case study that you can share to kind of illustrate that?
Sure. So the two strains that we know can cross the blood-brain barrier, strains of molds that make the mycotoxins that can cross the blood-brain barrier are cetomium, which makes cheteroglobulin A and C, I think. And then eniotin, which is from fusarium. Fusarium's favorite place to live is in the HVAC system. And we've seen a lot of occupational exposure from this because of larger buildings where partial pressures and things like that are really hard for them to control. So, or in a home that is older and has forced air heat and they haven't never had their ducts cleaned. So fusarium can be one of those common things to find in those situations. Knowing that, you know, basically then when you turn your heat on or your AC on, you're now breathing in a toxin that can go right up through the blood-brain barrier, even if you have a patent barrier, even if it's just you're healthy as a horse, your digestion's been healthy as a horse, you have that big solid bowel movement every morning, you know, you can eat anything you want. Then you get in an environment where you're breathing in this toxin, you start to get blood-brain barrier breakdown. But even if you're healthy, it'll cross that barrier. And the places that we see that these toxins go is the cerebellum, the hippocampus. So cerebellum has to do with balance and proprioception, so where you are in space. So you might notice that maybe balance starts to get a little tippy or a little off, you're running into walls, or you didn't quite know that step was that high, those little things. Hippocampus, and then also frontal lobe. So we're seeing frontal lobe dementia associated with mold exposure. Dr. Bredesen is a pioneer in this. He's an Alzheimer's researcher, and he calls this type 3 or inhalational Alzheimer's. So it's basically you're breathing in things that are causing dementia type symptoms. So cognitive decline is the first thing to go. Brain fog, you know, can't quite, you know, it's almost like they don't have the energy to think. So your thinking just slows down. And think about if you're buzzed, if you've had too much alcohol and, you know, things are just, you think you're thinking well enough and then you go back and you read that text or that whatever, you're like, what was I thinking? Yeah, so that's kind of what happens when you get mold brain. as you can get that foggy mind, slow thinking, word finding issues, problems with math, problem writing. People will be more apt to read an audiobook than read a book because your eyes get affected, the visual processing centers get affected. And that can actually also progress into MS. There are a couple of cases of MS that I've worked with that it was because of exposure to water damage building that set up the demyelination system or situation. In both of those cases, they also had Lyme disease. So those are two buggers that I see really correlative with MS. But MS makes sense because with MS, mold toxins cause a lot of the same symptoms, urinary frequency, inability to hold urine, weakness of the sphincters, visual changes, all of that that we see consistent with MS is also things we see with certain mycotoxins that can cross right through that blood-brain barrier. Did I answer your questions?
Yeah, it's scary to think about. I mean, I feel lucky that I got out of that house and I was just there visiting my mom on vacation. I mean, she's okay now as well. And I don't think reason she didn't really get infected, but it is scary when you think about all the places that we can have a mold overgrowth in our home or workspace and, you know, mm-hmm. or furnace or basement. And I was just on vacation with family and extended family, and some of them live in the greater Toronto area. And they said that a lot of Canadians like to spend their time in the basement. And, you know, if you live in Canada or Vermont or Wisconsin and, you know, you're spending your winter in your basement, then
yes,
this could be a huge concern that you're not even aware of. You know, you're just binge watching Netflix and you're like, well, why am I tired and have brain fog all the time? So,
yeah. Yeah. The classic falling asleep, watching TV on the couch in the basement kind of thing, because, you know, you're falling asleep because you're getting poisoned basically. Yeah. Causes fatigue.
Yeah, it makes sense. And one of the key questions that I usually ask men for low testosterone is, do you fall asleep on the couch after work or in around dinner time? You know, like the happy hour to dinner time, 5 to 7 is a low testosterone. And we already went over how mold affects testosterone. So that's the overlap there again. We're seeing.
Yep. And immune function. It's also immune toxic. It will actually rewire our genes at the gene level to make us more wimpy, more immune exposed. That's how it's a carcinogen. But what I'm often seeing is just people who have frequent infections, or when they get an infection, it lasts forever. And it usually goes to a bacterial thing. That can be also a sign of mold toxicity. And again, we would think of that from a hormone sphere of like, oh, well, their adrenals are off, their hormones are off, so their adrenals are off, so their cortisol is too high, they're under stress, that's suppressing the immune systems, that's why they're getting sick all the time, which can absolutely be the reason, but it also could be mold. So that's what I'm on this mission, because I think men are really struggling because the complaints of mold are so vague and they're subtle at first. And I don't think that men feel comfortable coming into doctors to say, you know, I don't feel myself. I can't quite figure out what's wrong, but I know something's wrong. That doesn't feel concrete enough, I think, to most men to have them come in and get a good workup. And then not very many practitioners are mold literate. Right. So then we have the problem with somebody not understanding that is a pattern that we see.
Yeah. And that is actually what I usually hear from men. And I mean, most of the men I work with are usually 35 to 55. And they usually say, you know, I just don't really feel like myself. I think it might be my hormones, but, you know, maybe you can help me. Mm-hmm. And like you said, most people aren't even looking at these things for them. So,
yeah. But I have a quiz online if people want to just take it. It doesn't really address some of the subtleties. I have a clinical questionnaire that I use in practice, so for clinicians, but people are welcome to that questionnaire as well. I put it in my book because I had to create it to help me in clinic determine who might be mold sick and who may not be, because mold can affect every system in the body and cause almost any symptom. So how do you rule that out? You know, and there's not one keynote symptom that says, okay, that's mold for sure. because you don't even need sinus irritation or some of the things that allergies, asthma, you know, things that we would associate with mold exposure. If it's only toxin exposure and the spores are trapped behind building materials, like if it's behind the wall or under the carpet, you're just getting the toxin. You're not necessarily getting the spore exposure. So not necessarily does somebody have respiratory or sinus or allergy problems. It's common, but it's not necessary. Right. So I created this questionnaire. So if anybody wants the questionnaire to score themselves, they're welcome to it.
I'm going to do it right after we finish our interview today, and I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm okay. I was just in Florida and it's pretty humid there, but I think mm-hmm. I should be okay, hopefully. Yeah, it does seem, you know, this is such a huge problem. And I think a lot of people are working in older buildings and, you know, especially I have friends that are in the military or their significant other is, and those buildings are old and have mold, and people really aren't as aware as they need to be. So I'm very grateful for you sharing all your wisdom mm-hmm. with everybody.
Thanks. I'm grateful for the chance to do it. Get on my little soapbox. Thanks for giving me the box.
Yeah. I mean, I say this sincerely. I definitely think everybody should read Dr. Jill's book. And if you haven't already, Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health. And you can find her book on Dr. Krista, CRISTA.com, Break the Mold. And also the for practitioners, you have a skill and confidence building class, Are You Missing Mold Illness, under courses on your website as well. And then the mold quiz that Dr. Jill is mentioning is at moldquiz.com. So you can go there and check all those resources. Is there any parting wisdom or comments, statements you want to share with anybody?
I guess the main thing is trust yourself. You know, if someone doesn't feel right, and even if you have that sneaking suspicion about, I wonder if it was that roof leak, or I wonder if it was that musty place I had to work, or, you know, if you're in construction, these guys are getting exposed to stuff all the time. Trust it. And your inner knowing is telling you something. That inner sense of unrest is your body communicating something to you. And so go get help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Asking for help seems to be the hardest thing for most men. So
yeah.
You know, yeah. Don't wait until you're, you know, bleeding out of an orifice or, you know, can't remember your name or something like that.
So, yeah. Mold can get very scary. It can, the symptoms and the problems, you know, it's a carcinogen. It's not just about, you know, testosterone levels. I mean, this can be a very scary problem and it's very treatable. So the earlier, the better, and the easier it'll be to get better.
So there is hope, folks.
Yeah.
Well, everybody read Break the Mold, and please share the podcast with your friends and family. And we look forward to you coming back for our next episodes. Thank you and have a great day. Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.